Good afternoon and welcome to Time Out, your program of informative interviews with persons of note, persons with fascinating careers, leaders of today and tomorrow, and others who will allow you to invest an hour and receive a guaranteed valuable return. So stay tuned. This is Bill Hendrickson, your host of Time Out on a sizzling day in Carrboro, North Carolina. And the sun is out, and I imagine most people are trying to go to the local pools or wherever they can to avoid the heat. And it's going to be hot all week. So stay tuned to this radio station because you'll hear some cool music. And it's so nice to have people in Carrboro, in the departments of Carrboro, come to visit us here at Time Out at WCOM. And today we have two people, one of whom we have met before, Fire and Rescue Chief Susanna Williams and Deputy Chief Ray Enoch. Is that right?
That's correct.
We got your names right?
You did.
Yes, sir.
And these folks represent very important parts of our community, whether they work in Carrboro, Chapel Hill, or Washington, D.C. People in the world of first responders are in so much demand, and the ones here in Carrboro that we've talked to before and the ones we'll talk to today, these ones in that we've talked to Susanna Williams before, and we'll talk to her again, and Deputy Chief Enoch is new to this radio station, but we're going to hear all about what they're doing and the new things. I shouldn't say the new things, the creative work that they have gotten into, just because society is getting more and more complex, and the call for them is more frequent. So let's talk about who they are first. And Deputy Chief Enoch has a shorter story than Chief Williams, because I read your bio. I didn't see a bio of you. So tell us a little bit about yourself, where you came from, your history, and what you're doing here in Carrboro.
All right. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Ray Enoch. I'm the Deputy Chief Fire Marshal with Carrboro Fire Rescue. I started my fire service career, well, first of all, I was born and raised in Burlington, North Carolina.
Not too far down the road.
Not too far, about 30 minutes. Graduated from Walter M. Williams High School, class of 1998. When I was about 15 years old, I joined the Burlington Fire Department Fire Explorers.
So oh, 15 years old. Wow.
Yes, sir.
Okay, great.
So I was a junior firefighter. As soon as I graduated high school, I went to Alamance Community College for the first fire academy. Actually, one of the people that I graduated the fire academy with, I work with now in Carrboro.
Uh-huh.
After that, I got my EMT, and when I was 20, because of hiring age,
your
was 20,
EMT is what?
Emergency medical technician.
Oh, okay.
So when I was 20, I was eligible to be hired at Burlington Fire, so I got hired at Burlington Fire as a firefighter. I worked there for 2 years, and after working there 2 years, I was offered a job at Chapel Hill Fire Department, so I was hired as a master firefighter. Worked there for 15 years, rose through the ranks, ended up as a fire inspector. I really enjoyed my time at Chapel Hill Fire Department. I was there for 15 years.
Okay. And here you are.
Well, yeah, after my 15 years in Chapel Hill, I was offered a job in Mecklenburg County as assistant fire marshal.
Oh.
So very busy there. I went there for a year, and then I applied for the job in Carrboro, and I was made an offer. I'm back in Carrboro.
Okay. Wow. So you were only in Mecklenburg for a year.
Yes, sir.
But this was a better opportunity you felt.
It was an amazing opportunity.
We managed to get him back in our area. Yes.
Okay. Well,
we want that talent back here.
Yeah.
Yes.
You were a fire inspector somewhere along the line. What's a fire inspector?
You do code enforcement. So you come around and depend on a different business or multifamily residence. You do annual inspections. Some properties are inspected annually, some every 2 years, some every 3 years. So you inspect them to make sure that they are safe. So you look for any violations.
Well, do you levy penalties on things that aren't proper?
Yes, sir. You usually give them 30 days to correct anything. If it's a life safety issue, they need to correct that immediately. But if it's something like an extension cord or something like that, usually try to work with them and give them 30 days.
You try to work with them, yeah. You don't go shut them down overnight if you
no.
don't have to.
And certainly use it as an educational experience, because
right.
a lot of times, you know, businesses and personnel just aren't aware of some of the things that are in the fire code, and so that's where it's our job to go in and teach them and educate them and give them the opportunities to make it safer.
Well, so you have, and so has Chief Williams, had different jobs and different, we're going to hear about that in a minute, but you all seem to go from one place to another. You don't start in Burlington and spend your life in the Burlington Fire Department. You could have, maybe.
Yeah, some people do in the fire service. Some do, and then some are like Ray and I, where we travel around and get a diverse, you know, type of experiences as we go through our career.
Well, your lifestyle started way back in Philadelphia.
It did.
And you went to a fancy school. You were the only... the only school in the whole country that gives bachelor's degree. You ever hear that, Rocco?
It is,
the
yes.
The high school that she went to
Central
in
High
Philadelphia,
School.
The
yes.
only school in the U.S. that gives bachelor's degree. You know, what's the name of that school?
Central High School of Philadelphia.
But it's a public school.
It is. It's part of the Philadelphia public school system. And
you had to apply, I
you
guess.
Have to
you
apply,
got picked.
Yes, you have to apply to get into the school. And so they have a very diverse group of students there. It was a wonderful experience. I was a member of the 252nd graduating class of the high school. So where Ray said he was class of 98, so that's another, I guess, uniqueness about my high school. We don't use our graduating year. We use what class number we were. So
yeah.
For me, it's 252
okay.
was my graduating class.
But what prompted the city of Philadelphia or whomever to establish this collegiate school in the public school system, where you had a bachelor's degree, and that's a collegiate degree?
So that's part of what remains open to debate. Nobody has ever tried to see if they could go on to a graduate program or, you know, how much weight it actually would hold. But, yes, so the history of it, that, unfortunately, I don't know. But some of the history, it used to be an all-boys school. And then in the 80s, some young ladies petitioned to be able to get the same education
as
the boys.
What 80s?
The 1980s.
A 1980s?
Yes.
Oh, that's pretty recent. Okay. I thought you meant 1880s.
No. No, in the 1980s, yeah, they petitioned so they could get the same education as the young men that were going there, and they were successful. And so, yes, the school, as far as being co-ed, has not been co-ed for very long.
So then you went on to Temple.
I did, Temple University. And Owls.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And then you went on to another school to get a master's degree.
I did, Anna Maria College.
So, okay, then you got into this, well, you, as opposed to getting a job for IBM or working for the a government in the State Department or something like that, you decided to become a member of the first responders world. So tell me what prompted that decision.
Yes, that's a great question. So unlike Ray, I did not start at a young age as a firefighter. You're correct. I went through my college career, and it wasn't until I moved down here and actually had started my teaching career. I was a teacher first by trade, taught kindergarten and third grade.
Where?
At Burlington Day School in Burlington.
Okay.
Yeah. I joined Graham Volunteer Fire Department, became a volunteer firefighter. I was looking for some things to do in my off time when I wasn't teaching, and I fell into the fire service and absolutely fell in love with it and decided that was the career that I
you
wanted.
You were in Graham.
In Graham.
That's kind of a small suburb of Burlington.
It is small, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
So you got a taste of it there, and you liked what you the taste of the whole thing, the flavor.
Yep, and I was still able to use what I learned through Temple, obtaining my education degree, because a lot of what we do in the fire service is, you know, like we talked about with the code inspection and being fire inspectors, you know, we also go out and do public education, and we educate the public on safety and ways that they can be safer and help make our community safer. So I was still able to use and go out and teach and still have that education component as part of what we do.
What I learned about both you and Ray is, as you move along, you get different jobs doing different things. You're not all hanging on the back of a fire truck that we see.
We can't do that anymore.
You've got to be safe these days.
Yes. Wear our seatbelts.
So you went from you started your work in Burlington.
I did.
And then you went elsewhere.
To Chapel Hill.
Somewhere you were in Jacksonville.
I was in Jacksonville as division chief of training, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you came here in the job you have now.
Yes, as fire chief.
And you competed with thousands of others, I guess.
It wasn't thousands. Well, I think it was 80 other people.
But so when you compete for a job like this, does the town hire a consultant, or does the town do it themselves to go out and search? How do they find you and people like you to come to the to get interviewed and to compete for these jobs?
Yeah, so it varies from municipality to municipality. But in the case of Carrboro, they did hire a consultant, and that consultant went out and advertised for the position and basically managed the hiring process of finding the next fire chief for Carrboro. And so I participated through that process and was a successful candidate.
And what was your job in Jacksonville?
I was division chief of training. So I oversaw
division
the training.
Division chief of training. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, you had a larger department there. Jacksonville's not a large city, but it's bigger than Carrboro.
It is, yes. It had about 20-some thousand population. We had five stations and about not quite 100 personnel in the department. So, yes,
okay,
it was a little bit bigger.
Well, so training is so essential. And do you have a training person here, or do you do the training? Are you two guys?
We do. No. So Captain Mills is our training captain, and so he oversees the training for Carrboro Fire Rescue Department. And then he, in conjunction with the other three captains, helped to deliver the training then out to our personnel.
So you have, 37 people on your staff now?
We do, yes.
And what's the turnover rate?
I don't know the exact percentage.
Well, you don't have to give me a percentage, but there must be some turnover.
So there is in any organization. You know, there's always going to be turnover. One of the things is we try to stay competitive, with salaries, and sometimes that's hard, competing with other municipalities. But I think one of the great things about Carrboro is, in addition to the salary, the benefits that are offered to employees. So our benefits are a really great thing that we can use when we go out and recruit new personnel.
So that's one attraction.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just you two, but it's the benefits that go with it.
Yes. Yeah. And a small town, some people like to be part of a small town. So when you come to work for a small department like Carrboro, you get to be involved in a lot more things than you would if you were in a larger metro department. In a larger metro department, if you're a firefighter, that's all you're going to do is be a firefighter. You're going to ride the truck. You're going to do firefighter things. Whereas here, we have some firefighters that, help out with and that's part of some of the restructuring we did over the last year, is really capitalizing on the talents that we have in our personnel, because we are a small department. And so they are active in a lot of projects that they wouldn't necessarily be part of if they were in a bigger metro department.
So tell me about this restructuring that you did.
Yeah, so
this is new from the last time we talked.
It is. So in the fire service, you typically will have three shifts, they're called, and they have letters, A, B, and C shift. So because we're a smaller department, because people had special projects, we realized these special projects were just scattered throughout the department across all three shifts, and there wasn't really any continuity in how projects were completed. And so,
give me a project.
We have some people that oversee our community risk reduction, so the ones that oversee all of our public education, and we have others that might oversee our ladders, and others that might oversee our apparatus maintenance, others that might help develop policies. And so it was really hard for the ones that were working on similar projects to work together, and so that was slowing us down. We weren't being efficient. Personnel that had to pull from the same line item in the budget, a lot of times there were delays in projects because of how they had to communicate, when they were off. One person's working, another person might be off on their four-day break. So with the restructuring, and we worked with our captains and our other officers, and so it was really designed by the department as a whole, and it's unique. I don't know of any other departments in the area that are doing this, but so we now, instead of having three shifts, have three divisions. And so what we did was we grouped
got
all
rid of the ABC.
We got rid of that. We said forget that. And so Carrboro stepped it up a notch is what we did. So we have our planning and support division.
Planning and support division.
We have our community risk reduction division. And then we have our logistics division. And so each one of these three divisions, they're still overseen by a captain, which is how they were as shifts. But now that captain, and part of the other thing, too, was when people had their special projects, it was just that one person that held all that knowledge. So if that person left the department or was out for an extended period, sometimes projects were put on hold, and that slowed us down. So now the captains oversee their division, and they've been charged with making sure that everybody in the division is knowledgeable about all the projects that are assigned to that division, so there won't be any disruption in how we do our day-to-day business. So it's kind of all the back-end things that go on in a fire department that a lot of people don't usually
think
of.
We don't know about these.
Right. You think of us out there riding on the fire trucks and, right, putting out the fires. And yeah. So it's been working great. We're working a lot more efficiently, and it's moving along good.
So is this setup that you have here now being used in other cities, or is this kind of created yourself and you're willing to pass it on to Chapel Hill? And did they have this kind of division in Chapel Hill?
They had shifts, but not divisions. And Chapel Hill is a little bit bigger than Carrboro, so if you were a firefighter, you may only did firefighting stuff. You were not afforded the opportunity to participate in special projects or help with other projects because you're a bigger department than Carrboro.
Yeah, I had the police chief, I think, on my show from Chapel Hill. What's his name?
Chief Blue.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that was several years ago. About 4 or 5 years ago, yeah. Anyway, so these people who have assigned various projects within each division do that when they're not out doing things to save the public.
That's correct.
Because we all wonder what goes on in a firehouse during the day when everything's quiet.
So they're busy. Do you want to speak to some of
the things? Yeah, they're very busy. They're working on their special projects, working on stuff for their divisions, training. It's a lot of stuff. It's not the perception that they sit around and sleep and eat. They get very little downtime.
Yes.
Very. And a lot of days after 5 o'clock, they're still working and getting caught up on stuff. It's a lot of paperwork now they have to do as far as reports and documenting everything. So there's a lot of stuff they do. Their days are pretty busy.
Now, you have two stations in Carrboro.
We do.
And where do you guys hang out, the two of you?
Our offices are at Station 1, which is at 301 West Main Street, right beside Town Hall.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And where's the other station?
Out on Homestead Road. Homestead Road.
Okay, sure. I know where. All right, yeah. Have to focus on these locations. So now you're surrounded by Orange County, and that's a volunteer group. What's Orange County?
We're surrounded by White Cross. We have some. We have actually.
White Cross has a fire department.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
It's a volunteer department.
They have paid people there in the daytime. They may have paid people that work at night, but they have a lot of volunteers, and they supplement with some paid staff, which are part timers. We also border an area with North Chatham Fire Department.
Uh huh.
Chapel Hill. Mm-hmm. Orange Grove to the north of us.
Off Orange Grove Road. There's a fire station out there.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So and then we also do protect part of Orange County. So the county contracts with us to provide protection to the South Orange Fire District. So that's also part of what Carrboro Fire Rescue provides, fire and EMS
so
services.
So you have to know where the fire is if you're going to go there or not. So if you don't, if it's just across the line, the heck with it.
We help each other out.
So Orange County is very fortunate that every fire department in Orange County participates in what we call an auto aid agreement. And so when calls are close to the border like that, we will dispatch it, our telecommunications center will dispatch out the neighboring departments. And so for a structure fire in the county, and Carrboro included, you're going to get 4 departments that respond to help put out that fire so that we make sure we're helping the community. And that's something that every fire department in Orange County has agreed to participate in.
So there's a fire station on 86 near the Presbyterian Church out there, New Hope area, near 86, where 86
New
goes
Hope
out.
Is that New Hope Fire? Yeah.
I think there may be their station, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know the station.
Now, so that's closed most of the time. The people don't hang out there frequently, do they, the volunteer?
Yeah, I think New Hope has 2 stations. I think if it's the station you're talking about, maybe it's just volunteers go to that station. The other station, they do have people that work there, and they have somebody that's there 24 hours.
No, they do. So some of these volunteer stations have the 24-hour coverage.
They do.
Humanity.
Each one runs differently, and they do what's best for their community. The chiefs will decide how they need to manage and run the department, and they'll provide that service. But so some volunteer departments will require the volunteers to come in and basically, I say quote unquote work, but they're not being paid. They have to do a volunteer shift at the station, so that way the station has coverage 24/7. Other volunteer departments, when the call goes out, the volunteers will respond back to the station and then get the trucks and go respond to the call. And then other departments, like we have some in Orange County, like what Chief Enoch was talking about, will hire part-time people to work during the day when most of the volunteers are at work, and then in the evenings and through the night, the call response is covered by the volunteers. So, yeah.
Okay, you're listening to a conversation with Chief Susanna Williams and Deputy Chief Ray Enoch of the Carrboro Fire Department, and we're talking about this department, and we're talking about what's happening in the neighborhoods outside. And do you coordinate well with them, or is there? I imagine there must be some kind of conflicts once in a while.
Every now and then it might come, but for the most part, I mean, I think that's one of the nice things about the fire service is that everybody in the fire service has a commitment to putting the community first, and so. I mean, even in your own department, you can have sometimes some people that might not get along so well, but that's kind of one of just the beautiful things about the fire service is once you get on scene, all differences are put aside, and your primary focus is out there helping those citizens and doing what's best for the citizens.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that's important to know because, you know, we don't know anything about this. We hear you talk, and every time I talk with you, and I read about you on the web, your department. I'm not a citizen here, but if I were, I'd feel quite comfortable about the service I'm getting from the Carver Fire Department. Fire, you call yourself Fire Rescue.
We do.
Not Fire and Rescue. It's Fire Rescue.
Fire Rescue.
What happened to the word "and" between?
We couldn't fit it on the T-shirt.
Oh, okay. Well, so, but last time we talked, I think you mentioned the rescue in quantity of activity, perhaps more than fires.
Yes, the fire service has changed a lot. So we have to take care of other issues. So fire prevention has came a long way since years and years ago. So we prevent a lot more fires now. So
you prevent a lot more?
Yes, sir.
Okay, well, explain that.
So out of all our call volume, fires are actually working structure fires are less than 1% of what we actually do. So most of the time we go to vehicle accidents, medical calls, public service calls. So like I said, the best fire that we can fight is the one that we can prevent. So our engine companies and our captains, they're tasked. They come out and do the inspections with all the commercial businesses and all the apartment complex. So we don't have jurisdiction as far as code enforcement on private residents, but we do try to make sure we keep the community safe to prevent fires. So, like I said, actual working structure fires is a small percentage of what we actually do.
So when somebody needs help, physical, they're sick or they had a heart attack or something, what do you have, vehicles, your own vehicles, or some other organization provide ambulance services?
So Orange County Emergency Services, they provide the ambulance service. But
it's not yours. Okay.
We don't have an ambulance, but we'll send a fire truck, and our fire truck will go with three people on it, and they're going to respond also along with EMS.
I know every time I live in an apartment complex in Durham, and every time somebody calls at night or during the day and I see an ambulance, there's always a fire truck.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
so a lot of times the fire stations are in closer proximity than the ambulance locations. And so because the fire departments can get out there quicker, fire departments will respond and we provide that first medical intervention for the patient. And so we'll try to stabilize the patient and take care of them until the medics get there with the ambulance. And then since they're advanced life support, we're basic life support is what our certification is. And so then they come in and they'll take the medical services they're going to provide to the patient to the next level higher, and then they also do the transport. And then sometimes, depending on the call, if it's bad enough, our personnel will actually ride in the ambulance with the medics and assist with patient care while they're taking
your
them to the hospital.
Your personnel could be. Okay.
They will.
Mm-hmm. Well, so what level of training now? We're talking about your people and their own medical training. What level of training and how do you do that for your own staff? That's essential.
Sure. So all of our personnel are EMT basics, so emergency medical technician basics.
Okay.
And so with the assistance of the county, we provide their continuing education. So every person is required to attend 3 hours of training each month.
Who does the training?
So we have a medic in the county. She's a member of the Orange County Emergency Services. And so she comes in and she's an EMT instructor. And so she comes in and every month we'll train our personnel. So that way we're constantly staying abreast of if there's any new techniques, new things that we need to know as far as delivering that medical care to our patients. And then even just to continuously refresh and make sure that we're staying on top of our skills, we do training every month in our medical.
So you are usually first in line at the need for help rather than the medical person. You guys are first because you're here, and Orange County medical people may be 20 miles away.
Well, not that far.
Yeah, we're typically first, but we are fortunate in Carrboro that Orange County Emergency Service, they stationed at our station one, they have an ambulance there, and also at our station two, they have an ambulance there.
Oh, they do? So, they have people?
Yes,
they
sir.
Do, yes. Okay.
24 hours. Station two, the ambulance there just went 24 hours a couple of months ago. But so as long as the ambulance is at the station and we're going to the same call, they're right behind each other. Mm-hmm. But they could be, you know, they could be from another call.
So if I'm going to need help, I should live in Carrboro, I guess. Let's hope I don't need it. Anyway, well, so the training, how intense, how far down the line of helping an individual can you go efficiently with your training? What can you, how deep into help can you provide besides putting a bandage on?
Oh, so, okay. So we have some medications that we can actually administer.
Like what?
Epi,
yeah, we can do the epi. Oxygen. that's a drug, right? We can do that.
These are for stop a stroke or stop a heart attack?
Most of our medical emergencies will benefit from having oxygen applied to them, you know, with either the mask or through the non-rebreather, the little tubes that go in the nose.
Okay.
So, you know, we've got that. You know, sometimes if people are having breathing difficulties, we've got medications we can deliver to help open up their airways for them. And so, you know, we have some temporary things that we can do until the medics get there because, of course, they're
You have medication. You don't have equipment.
No. Well, we have equipment.
We have more equipment than medication,
though. Yeah. So if somebody, say, you know, suffers a traumatic injury, you know, we worry about, you know, their neck, we can put on the C-collar. Uh-huh. You know, the things that keep.
If they break an arm or a leg and it's bleeding, you can help stop that.
We can help stop the bleeding. Yep.
We carry defibrillators.
Yep. So if their heart stops.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Get defibrillators.
So you're pretty well prepared for a lot of crises, aren't you?
We are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't take long for the medical people to get there because they're close by here.
Unless they're on another call. So.
You and say the ambulances are here, but are the people that run the ambulances close by? I mean, they got to get to your station to get the ambulance and crank it up.
They're with the ambulance all the time, so there's always going to be the two personnel assigned to the ambulance.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. 24 hours?
24 hours, yes, sir.
So the station where you have these ambulances, there's people there?
Yes.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
They have their own separate quarters that they sleep in. That's different than the firefighters, but they just spend time together. Sometimes they eat together and stuff. But EMS, they're usually in and out a lot. They stay pretty busy.
Oh, they do? They stay busy other than with you people.
Yes, because their jurisdiction is bigger than just where we are. So they might extend over into out into the county where we don't cover or over into Chapel Hill a little bit. Yeah.
So you have two of the Orange health people here in this town. Where are the others? How many others are there in the county? Like Chapel Hill has.
I don't know for sure. They do have an ambulance at Chapel Hill Fire Station 2. They have a couple in the county. I'm not for sure what the county locations are, but spread out.
Though. Maybe that would be another good future leader to interview. You could bring in the Orange County Emergency Services personnel and talk to them, and they could speak more to the services they provide from the EMS side of things.
Well, you're getting everybody started with help, which is really important. By the way, it's 5:30. I got announced our station. You're listening to WCOM. This is your voice in the community, and the folks in this community and elsewhere support WCOM. And I'll tell you, without that support, I wouldn't be talking to the fire chief and the Deputy Chief of Carrboro this afternoon. I would be sitting home watching the news on television and complaining. But it's a hot day in Carrboro. It's fairly cool here in the. You comfortable here? Is the temperature okay? It's a little warm in here.
We're outside all day, so it's a whole lot better.
It's better than outside. Yes.
We're attached, as you know, to the Art Center, so we depend on the Art Center to control the heat, air conditioning, and whatever. In this particular unit and the lights too, we control our radio equipment if we're lucky, and we're lucky today because nothing's happening. You're on the air, and I'll hear all about it when I get home. which is nice. I know I at least have one listener.
There you go. Yeah,
but we broadcast nationally because I have a list. I sent you my list for the – I didn't send you a list, but I sent you my announcement. And I have a list of about 60 people in various parts of the country who are interested in what we're doing here at WCOM. And so they often listen, and sometimes they call in, and sometimes when I get home, I see an email, great show, Bill, have them again, or something like that. Nobody complains.
Well, that's good.
But we are supported by people in the community, and you can go to our website, wcomfm.org, and make a safe and secure donation. And we're a nonprofit, so every donation you make is tax deductible. Or you can stop by here. We're attached to the world famous Arts Center in Chapel Hill and Carrboro. And you can slip a check in an envelope under the door, and we will give you credit for that. So I want to thank all you folks out there for supporting the station. And without your support, as I said, you won't be listening to this conversation. So, okay, I guess what I've been most concerned about in this whole issue of safety is how are you tuned in to the changes in attacks and problems that are, you know, harassment and things that are happening in our world. How do you guys fit in understanding how to avoid or solve or answer a problem of someone who's going to attack something in this town, something new with a new kind of equipment, or attacking maybe through phones or other issues. How do you tune into what's happening in that world?
So that's a really great question. So I think both Chief Enoch and I can both say that, you know, in our 20-some years that we've got in the fire service, that it has certainly changed over the years, and the complexity of the types of calls that we may respond to. And so that's where, you know, as leaders in the fire service, you know, we're continuously researching and seeing what's out there, and we network and we talk to other fire chiefs and chief officers who may have experienced different types of calls. You know, we attend conferences, and so we're always continuously learning from other departments. It's, I think, another really great thing about emergency services, not just fire, but police and EMS, is that everybody's willing to share their lessons learned, their experiences. And so, you know, even Durham's gas explosion that they just had a couple months ago. So, you know, they're currently doing their after-action critique, and I'm sure afterwards, you know, they'll share with other fire departments what went well with their response, what didn't go so well. And so that way we're continuously learning from each other in our profession.
Okay, so what is new in 2019 that was not around in 2014, 5 years ago, as far as being aware of potential risks? Is anything new as far as potential risks that you have to be prepared for that you weren't prepared for 5 years ago?
It's always new risk. One thing I do think that as far as emergency services is more regional training. So we're working together with other agencies on a bigger scale to be prepared for those larger scale incidents, because if you have an incident that occurs, it's going to take more than just the people, that resources that you have in Carrboro. So you try to be proactive instead of reactive and start planning, having scenarios, and get your resources lined up. So if something does happen, you know, hopefully it never does. But if it does, that you've trained on it, and you know, hopefully you'll be better able to handle the
situation. You had anything in the area that you could refer to that might be a new problem that has come up in the last 5-10 years that didn't have before that you happen to be aware of? Maybe there is nothing.
We had the water crisis.
And we had two of them within a couple years, so maybe that was something. I mean, certainly for me, that was the water issues that we had with a WASP, and we had the water main break down here on Jones Ferry Road.
Yeah, so, right. Now that was a serious issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So where did you fit into that?
So, you know, that's where, you know, we work in conjunction with our town communications manager, and so we help to get the message out. And when you have these larger incidents like that, so for instance, when the water main break with Owassa, the county will open their emergency operations center, and Owassa had an emergency operations center open. And so basically, these two emergency operations centers will work together to help get the message out. What do people need to do? You know, what are some, you know, if they have a need for something, where can they call? And so that way you're having that consistent message put out. And so for that, it wasn't really much on a response end for us. It was more of just a helping to make people aware of what was going on. But
well,
so if it was
that, a water main break affects millions. Well, not millions. That's that big population, but everybody in this area that uses that water.
Sure. And when we had the do not use a couple years ago, you know, for a small stretch of time there, it was where, you know, there wasn't enough water in the system for fighting fire.
Right.
And so, you know, we couldn't just go and hook up to a hydrant if we were to have a fire. So that's where we had to work with
them. Does your water come from that system?
It does, yes.
Whether it's
in the
into
town.
Your private home or into the hydrant. It all
it
comes
does.
From the same
from
system.
Awasa. In this area, yes, Awasa provides the water.
Delivery. Changing the subject just a second. Talking about fire hydrants, where I lived a while back, the fire department in Durham was coming to hydrants and then opening the hydrants and letting it run.
Mm-hmm.
Water was just going down.
So every year you have to flow the hydrants and grease the caps and stuff to make sure that they do work. And then you hook up gauges and you get the residual and static flow because you have to test them every year to make sure that they do work. And
every hydrant has – how many hydrants do you have in Carrboro?
Oh, my goodness. Was it 200?
I'm saying we like a little over 200.
Yeah.
So you're out there every day doing this?
No, we take a month out of the year, and usually within a month, with between all three divisions working on it, they'll get all the hydrants.
And how tested. Long is the hydrant open during the testing process?
Well, they can test one in like 5 or 10 minutes.
Yeah,
it
not
take
too long.
Long.
Oh well, in Durham, these things were running like all day long.
Well, we can't speak to how Durham
yeah.
does things. We can speak to how Carrboro does. But so, and that's a really important thing for us to do. So your fire departments get a grade on how well they provide fire protection.
Who grades them?
So depending on the size of your municipality. So for us, the state would come in and do the inspection for us. And in fact, we just got notification in December, Carrboro Fire Rescue is up for but they do it about every 10 years. So we're due up for our inspection. And so part of the grade is they check your water supply. And are you going out annually and making sure that it works properly? So.
Well, so they're grading not only you, but the Owasso water supply?
So, yes. Yeah, so Owasso's water supply would be part of it. They also grade our telecommunicators, which are through Orange County. So they grade how the 911 calls are answered and how quickly do they get the dispatch out so that we're notified so then we can go
now
respond
you
to
have,
call.
Now, have you been here for a grading?
I have not, no. I've only been here 4 years now.
Yeah, that's right.
So,
okay,
yeah.
So this is going to be your first. I wonder if the graders themselves are qualified to do this.
They are, yes. And there's a division.
You're sure they are?
They are, yes. In the Office of the State Fire Marshal, they have a team of people who are trained to do this, yes.
Well, Rocco decided to join us. Rocco, you know, is the host of the Music Hall every Saturday morning from 9 to 12. It's listened to worldwide. Rocco plays music that we all love, particularly that when you're getting older. As old as I am.
More seasoned.
Probably older than you are. But he plays great stuff, and he always has a question or two.
I do.
You're on.
Bill 4.
Oh, you got another mic.
There we go. Now we can hear you.
Bill, first of all, it's a pleasure to be on with you and a pleasure to see you again, Chief Suzanne, and to meet you, Ray. I've got a couple questions. As you know, as Bill said, I have a show on Saturday morning, and I've been doing it a number of years. And there are many Saturday mornings when I will come in here, and I'll be here at 8 o'clock, and the fire truck comes right in here, and it will just sit in this parking lot for maybe 10 minutes or 5 minutes and then leave. Sometimes the truck is here when I get here. And I've had people come in and ask me, they'll say, Rocco, what's the fire truck doing here? And I always say, I really don't know. But what is that all about?
Yes. So
do they know Rocco?
Does
our chief and the deputy chief know the answer to that question?
So really, it could be a whole host of things. So they could be running a medical call to anybody, you know, in this complex here. It could be at the hotel. It could be a fire alarm. You know, if it's close to lunchtime, they could be picking up lunch.
Or breakfast,
yeah, in the morning. So they could
any
be out
number
here.
Of things.
Yeah, they could be, you know, doing an inspection. You know, in one of the restaurants to where they're checking to make sure that it's safe for patrons to go in. And
sometimes I will come in and the truck is here very early and no one is in it, and it might be 7 in the morning, 6:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
And I guess it's something like that.
Didn't you drive a truck here when we had one of these radio shows in the past?
We did when we had our personnel. They did. I think they parked it right over here.
That's right.
Yes.
I was hoping you would do it today because it's so thrilling to see a big fire engine.
You can come visit us anytime. In fact, anybody can come stop by the station anytime. Or if you see our trucks out and about, you know, don't hesitate to stop and talk to personnel. You can ask them questions. Now, if they're in the middle of a call, you know, they might not be able to talk to you right then and there. But once they finish up.
Another couple questions about the fire trucks themselves. How much does it cost to buy one of these fire trucks?
It's very expensive. So for an engine, you're looking at about $750,000 for your standard engine pumper. For the big ladder trucks with the ladders on it, they're about $1.3 million now.
I remember we asked you that before, and I
really
was stunned.
Expensive. Yes, they are expensive.
You don't trade them in very often.
No, we don't. In fact, we in the town, our plan is, you know, we try to keep them for 20 years because it is an investment that, you know, the community is making in the fire department. So that's why our personnel are very diligent about, you know, every day we check off the trucks to make sure that they're working. You know, and if something isn't quite working right, they let our mechanic know so that way that he can get it fixed.
Now, do you have in-house mechanics where they can fix whatever on the truck?
We have a driver that's our driver mechanic. He can fix a lot of stuff. Occasionally, it may be something that we may have to call in one of the vendors to come in, but he can fix the majority of the stuff.
Yeah.
So you call in the manufacturing mechanic, the company that made the truck.
It might be that, or it might be a different, just like you might go out and solicit a car mechanic to fix your car. There's many different mechanics out there that work on larger vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
okay.
And so sometimes we might have to call, you know, basically a specialist in the apparatus.
Also, yeah. I've been hearing about drones being now used in fire departments to go into the fire itself and see if it's safe for the firemen or firewomen to go into the fire or into the house or whatever. Have you heard much about that? Or
The stuff it, I've heard and researched on, I'm a drone pilot also. So the stuff
you're
that
a what?
I'm a drone pilot.
Oh, are you?
So a lot of it's for more like the search and rescue stuff, searching for people, because you don't really have the time to send it into like a structure, because the construction of buildings and things these days, buildings go up a whole lot. They burn a whole lot faster with the materials that they used opposed to years ago. Like a house can be fully involved in a matter of a couple of minutes, whereas an older built home, it may take 10 to 15 minutes
before. What's the difference in the – what's the modern construction so flammable compared to 20, 30, 40 years
ago? So a lot of the materials that's in there, as far as your furniture and stuff, is more of the synthetic fibers opposed to the older furniture, maybe like heavy wood, heavy timber, anything like – a lot of the wood is like your engineered lumber where you got a lot of little pieces maybe glued together.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to burn a whole lot faster with the glue and start falling apart opposed to your heavy timber.
So you ought to tell people how to buy furniture. You ought to have you ought to train us.
Well, it's not only with the it burns hotter too opposed to the older stuff. So if we do, which we don't really get to do any of the live burn stuff, but people that do the live burn training, you can tell a big difference if you sit there. Like if it's an older built home, it takes a while. But if something newer, it goes up pretty quick.
I've always heard how every year there are more firefighters killed in the line of duty than police officers in this country every year. And I don't believe a lot of people realize that and know that.
Have you ever had any bad injuries among your force here in Carrboro?
I guess any injury is bad, right? Any injury that's going to take somebody away from being able to do their profession. But years ago, they did have one that it was a career-ending injury, you know, for that captain, you know, that was injured. So, you know, it does happen. You know, we're seeing now where it's not so much the fires that are getting the firefighters, but cardiac arrest tends to be a big killer of firefighters. And then now here in the last 5 to 10 years, the research is showing that cancer. So firefighters are 4 times more likely than the general public to be diagnosed with cancer. So that's
really
something that those of us in our profession have to be ready to face is that, you know, and so that's another thing in the last 2 years that we've embarked on in the department is that we're taking a lot of preventative measures to try hopefully prevent our personnel from being diagnosed with cancer.
Do you think it's the chemicals that you're continually dealing with?
So like Chief Enix said with the synthetic materials, yeah, I mean, once they burn, you know, it changes, I guess, the composition of that product, and so, you know, the chemicals that it releases, yes, are carcinogenic.
Sure,
and
you're breathing it, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's true.
And we wear the SCBAs, so not even so much breathing it, but it actually will. You'd think being fully covered in our turnout gear, we wouldn't be exposed to it, but studies are showing that it can even get up under our coats, and so even on firefighters' torsos, when they do these studies with the fine dust and the little controlled experiments, they'll see that it's actually getting inside the turnout gear. And one of the big areas, you know, when you're in turnout gear, your body temperature goes up, and so when you start to sweat, it opens up your pores, and that allows the carcinogens to get into your body. And so, you know, we're realizing that the neck is one of the big areas.
So this has been recently discovered, that your profession is more subject to cancer conditions than
yes.
than other.
And in fact, the state has done a really good job at recognizing that, and we now have three cancers that are recognized that would be considered a line of duty death
really?
For firefighters.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah,
really is.
Go ahead, Rocker. You had something else? Are you ready? I was going to ask him. You mentioned inspecting restaurants. Do you inspect all restaurants?
Yeah, yes, sir. Restaurants are inspected on an annual basis. They are inspected once a year. So they go in.
What are they looking for?
They make sure that the hoods are cleaned. Depending on what kind of cooking they do there, the hoods have to be cleaned monthly, quarterly, every 6 months, or every once a year. The hoods also have to be serviced every 6 months, which the fusible links, they have to be exchanged every 6 months. So they're checking for that. They check the exit lights, fire extinguishers, all sorts of different things they look for.
Are the restaurants that you guys are inspecting in Carrboro pretty well managed?
Yeah, all of our crews do a very good job of code enforcement. So if they find an issue, they usually get it corrected pretty quick. And our officers are pretty good on educating the people. So I think the first part is if you can educate them why it's important to fix it, where they may not be clear, they'll take the initiative to get it fixed kind of quickly.
Let it go. My phone is ringing, but let it go.
and that's another thing I do need to say, too, is that our business owners in the community are very responsive to working with the fire department to fixing any things that we may find. So a big thank you to them, because they, too, are committed to making sure that their business is safe.
You don't publish a list of restaurant inspection results?
No.
No, that's like – I think that's the health department.
Yeah, the health department has their little rating.
But you do the inspecting.
For fire code violations is what we're looking for. Yes, for fire code.
But you're talking about the hoods and things like that. That affects the food. I mean, food is involved with all this stuff that you're inspecting.
Yeah. We worry more about it if it's going to catch fire or not. Yeah.
We just make sure they're taken care of to prevent the fires.
Yeah.
Well, I have one more last question.
Okay.
If to our young listeners that are listening, if they are interested in becoming a firefighter, what pathway would you encourage them to take maybe to become a fireman or a firewoman down the road in high school or when they get out of high school or in college? Which way should they go? And I salute both of you and all of you. I really think you do a thankless job. And you work much harder than anybody realizes, and you're ready to go in there and put your life on the line for us here, the residents of Carrboro. And that is something special, and I appreciate it, and I salute you for the job you do, really.
Thank you, Rocco.
Yes, I appreciate
it. You have any last messages you'd like to give to us? As says is what we should be thinking about?
Sure. I guess I'll answer Rocco's question real quick. So
go ahead.
Can actually start in high school now in the Chapel Hill Carrboro school system or in the Orange County school system. Both school systems have a fire program where you can start working on your certification classes. So if they are interested, that's something they can pursue. And then certainly like Chief Enoch did, they could search out a fire explorer program when they turn 15 and maybe start looking at doing something like that and joining a volunteer fire department. And if they're interested in emergency services, rescue type things, we have the South Orange Rescue Squad right here. They're stationed out of Carrboro, so they could certainly join them as well. Yep.
Yeah. Well, I was always interested back to your original life and how you got into this, not out of high school, but you get into it pretty much out of college.
I was in my mid-20s.
You taught school for a while.
I did, yeah.
But then you became a volunteer.
Mm-hmm. I did.
And do a lot of the professional firefighters commence their career as volunteers and decide they want to go full-time?
I'd say we probably have a large portion, especially in this area, that start off as volunteers. And we even have, I'd say, probably 90% of our personnel, in addition to being career members of Carrboro Fire Rescue, are also volunteers in the community where they live.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, next week is a special holiday show. It's not the 4th of July on Monday, but we're going to play patriotic music. And Rocco had a song on his show last Saturday when I happened to be here, from old Kate Smith, and Rocco said he would be here next Monday to play that song again for our listeners of Time Out. So be sure you show up, and if you're not going
to
show up,
I'm going to try to be here. I promise you.
But that's next Monday's show. And I'd like to thank some people who help this particular show. Mike Cotter is a retired ambassador who has been on our show many times, probably 15 or 20 times, and I wrote him a note today. I think he'll be on the show again in early August. And Mike is an underwriter of this show. And when Mike comes to the show, he is full of information about what's going on in the international world. Even though he's retired from the State Department, he's very much involved with publishing a journal right here at UNC Chapel Hill, made up of letters and articles by other retired Foreign Service people. So Mike is really tuned in to what's going on in the international scene. And Tim Hux is the owner of a financial company named Rising Tide, and he will help you invest your money and hope your money rises with the tide. And I would also like to thank the Rhine Research Center. This is a continuing study of parapsychology and consciousness in the context of the paranormal and exceptional experiences. You can learn more from them at www.rhine.org. And they will have a team here doing a show with us on one of their new part of their world, which we'll talk about in a month or so. And MidCap Advisors is another financial service company in New York City that helps to underwrite this show. So without these folks and others, we wouldn't be having this great conversation with these smart, capable, promising citizens of our community. I mean, without you guys, it's just the way you put yourself out constantly to keep us alive.
They're one of the pillars of the community, without a doubt.
Well, anyway, if you have one last recommendation.
Sure. So with the 4th of July coming up, why don't we have Chief Enoch give a little fireworks safety message?
4th of July is coming up, and everybody wants to see fireworks. But I don't know if people really realize how dangerous fireworks are. Just to give you an idea, I'll talk about sparklers really quick. The little sparklers that a lot of people like to run around and play with.
Right.
So those burn at 1,200 degrees Fahrenheit, which is pretty hot where the burning
is.
So
if you're on the wrong end, it's trouble.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to see fireworks, we always recommend to go to a public show that's put on by professionals, because they are inspected by the fire marshals to make sure that they are safe, make sure that they're aimed the right directions, they're not going to go too high, and make sure that they're going to the fallout zone is away from the spectators. So the public fireworks go through an inspection to make sure that they are safe. So we always recommend go to a public show if you want to see
Where's
fireworks.
Where's the nearest public display here?
This year they're doing it at Southern Community Park in Southern Village. They used to do it at Chapel Hill at the Kenan Center.
Yeah, that's right. They don't do that anymore?
This is the first year they're moving it out to Southern Village.
So where will they do it in Southern Village?
They're going to do it at the park, but this year being as new, they're supposed to use bigger fireworks, and they're going to be bigger, and they'll go higher.
Wow. Well, that's so our lady that does the Friday show, Mary Hope, is moving to Southern Village, and she'll probably be there by then, so she'll see that fire. Southern Village is a great place to live, and I'm glad they're doing that out there. It'll give the community something to talk about. Okay, folks, thanks again for coming. It's great to see you. And
thank you.
We'll do
thank
this
you
again.
Having
and
us.
Boy, keep those fire trucks polished.
We will.
Rocco, thanks again.
Always a pleasure.
I'll see you
Bill.
On Saturday. 103.5. We're going to finish our show here. I'm going to have some music on in just a minute.